Hello everyone from the studio of CNTFR, thank you for joining us. Students at Dartmouth College in the US city of Hanover have set up an encampment in solidarity with the Palestinian people in Gaza. They call on the college officials to stop investing in Israel, which they describe as a Zionist and apartheid regime. Police has violently attacked students, arresting a number of them, and we were joined by researcher and political analyst Christopher Hilali earlier to get more details on the latest developments. Let's take a listen.
Last night, we had police, riot police, come to Dartmouth College, and with local and state law enforcement, they destroyed the encampment that was built there, and they arrested approximately 90 people, including professors and journalists. Many of the encampments throughout the United States have been brutally suppressed by an overwhelming police presence, a militarized police. They had drones. They had tear gas, they had weapons, they had even an armored vehicle, something that we would see overseas that the United States military has. They had it in our tiny town of Hanover, New Hampshire. The students were asking the college, which has billions of dollars in its endowment, to divest from all corporations and military entities that do business with the Zionist regime. And they were saying that this is something that upholds human rights and upholds the values of the college. But the college administration and the trustees, who are wealthy and do not want to see profits go down, they, of course, do not agree with that. And they say that the endowment should not be used for, quote unquote, political purposes. The United States likes to sloganeer, likes to tell other countries about democracy and human rights and freedom of expression and assembly and everything like that. But of course, this is the biggest hypocrisy, because now peaceful protesters, peaceful students who put up tents and said that they want peace in Palestine, that they want the liberation of the Palestinian people, that they want human rights, that they want to see an end to this ongoing genocide, they are met with this brutality that the American government claims other countries do, and is the first one to enforce sanctions and to call them in front of the UN and international tribunals. Now they do it here, but they say this is to maintain law and order.
That's while students at the Canada's McGill University have joined the global wave of pro-Palestine campus protests and encampments. They say Canada's unbridled support for Israel stems from a shared history of genocide and occupation. Students say Canada fears that it will be next if Israel is held accountable for its crimes in Gaza. McGill student Suroosh Shahriari joined us earlier with more details. Let's take a listen.
It started actually from McGill and now in Canada, in University of British Columbia, in Ottawa, and Western University. We all, I heard the news that they are also in camping. So this today, it was a special day because after almost 5 days, we had a counter-protest from the Israeli, pro-Israeli gathering on the, actually outside of the campus. So today was a really busy day for students, for solidarity students, and we had the presence of the police, Montreal police, in campus. But fortunately, we haven't had any kind of physical engagement or any kind of active physical. Fight or between the protesters and the police. Yet, the university, the president of the university, sent an email to all the students 3 days ago. And they have been trying to convince the protesters to dismantle the camp, but it was not successful. 3 days ago, the university informed the students that they have asked the Montreal police to get involved.
The United Nations says post-war reconstruction of Gaza will require an international effort unseen since the World War II due to the unprecedented devastation caused by the Israeli onslaught. According to UN Assistant Secretary General Abdullah Al-Dardari, 72% of all residential buildings in Gaza have been completely or partially destroyed. He said the UN estimates the cost of Gaza reconstruction at $30 to $40 billion. Dardari noted that the reconstruction of the territory is made more difficult by the presence of the large quantities of unexploded ordnance. A UN official had said earlier that Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has left dozens of tons of rubble and unexploded ordnance, which could take nearly 14 years to remove. Per Lothammer, a senior officer at the UN Mine Action Service, added that it's impossible to determine the exact number of unexploded ordnance found in Gaza. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out a series of new operations against Israeli targets in support of Palestinians in Gaza. The Iraqi Resistance said the first operation hit a vital Israeli target in Tel Aviv with advanced Al-Arqab cruise missile. The second operation, which used the same type of advanced missiles, targeted another vital target in Bir al-Sa'abi, also in the occupied territories. In the third operation, the resistance targeted a vital target in the Dead Sea area in the occupied territories with appropriate weapons. Iraq's Islamic Resistance said the new operations came in response to the massacre of Palestinian civilians by the usurping Israeli entity vowing to continue its anti-Israeli operations. During recent months, the Islamic Resistance has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Now to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Ramiro Funes, activist and political commentator from Los Angeles. Mr. Funes, welcome. We know that the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has been targeting U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria since the start of the U.S.-Israeli onslaught on Gaza. But in an unprecedented move, the resistance have for the first time targeted Tel Aviv. Now, your thoughts on that and the significance of it?
The attack of the Islamic Resistance of Iraq against the Zionist entity known as Israel is completely justified. We have to recall the long history of Zionist aggression against Iraq. First and foremost, it's important to point out that the so-called flag of Israel has two blue stripes, one of which represents the Nile River and one of which represents the Euphrates River. And that represents basically taking over Iraq's territory. Part of the Zionist project is not limited to Palestine. It is intent on expanding into Iraq, into Egypt, into the whole Middle East. And so Iraq understands very well that Israel is a grave threat to its existence, to its national determination and sovereignty. And so this was a legitimate attack. Now, let's also recall the war against Iraq, the invasion the U.S. led, which in reality was orchestrated by the Zionist regime. We know that the Zionist lobby is in full control of U.S. imperialism, and it is at the head and pulling the pull strings of the U.S. entity. The Zionist neocons who supported the Iraq war, who are loyal to Israel and act on behalf of Israel, include Bill Kristol, a Jewish Zionist who advised George W. Bush, Robert Kagan, another Jewish Zionist, co-founder of the Neoconservative Project for a New American Century, Max Booth, a Jewish Zionist writer and fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is also backed and supported by Israel and has carried out all these strategies on how to divide Iraq, Shia, Sunni, Kurds, Arabs, and Elliot Abrams, another Jewish Zionist American politician who has served as a foreign policy advisor to Reagan, to Bush, to Trump, and the list goes on. So at the end of the day, the people pulling the pull strings in the U.S. imperialist system are the Zionist lobby that works on behalf of Israel. So the Iraq war can really be seen as acting on behalf of Israel. And let's not forget also the attacks against President Bashar al-Assad in neighboring Syria, the so-called Syrian revolution, where they backed Daesh and other Wahhabi radical terrorist groups that Israel supported. In 2018, it was revealed in documents that Israel secretly armed and funded over 12 Syrian rebel groups that eventually, we all know, became terrorist groups and killed and murdered innocent people, and that violence spilled over into Iraq. And it was the Iraqi militias, the Islamic Resistance, led by the heroic general, Iranian commander Soleimani, that were able to defeat that. So it's no surprise that the Iraqi people have anger toward Israel, because Israel has been terrorizing and destroying Iraq for decades. And now this attack is completely justified. The Iraqi people are firmly in defense of the axis of resistance led by the Islamic Revolution in Iran, by the Palestinian people, by the Syrian people, by Ansar Allah, by Hezbollah in Lebanon. So what we're seeing is a legitimate response to Israeli aggression, And I think this is proof of evidence that Iran and the axis of resistance is gaining popularity in the region, and Israel Zionism is becoming increasingly isolated.
Mr. Funes, just recently we've also seen a resistance group from Bahrain launching a drone attack on Israeli targets in the occupied Palestine. The group is called the Al-Ashtar Brigade. They targeted the headquarters of Israeli logistics company Trucknet in the port of Eilat. Now, the question is, considering Iraq's unprecedented attack on Tel Aviv and also Bahrain making a move for the first time, are we to expect a rise in attacks on Israeli positions?
Definitely. What we saw from Bahrain is very tremendous. We also have to remember that Bahrain has a very long historical connection to Iran, to Iraq, especially with a tremendous presence of Shia Islam, of a revolutionary anti-imperialist Islam. There are a lot of revolutionary people in Bahrain, all over the Middle East in general, not even just Shia, Sunni as well, all Muslims in the Ummah who are uniting from all corners of the region to resist Israel. What we're seeing is very inspirational, something that we haven't seen in a very long time. People in the region uniting to fight this settler colonial entity known as Israel that does not deserve to exist, that does not deserve to be there, and frankly is a threat to everyone's lives in the world, not just in the Middle East, but all over the world. All these wars that are being perpetrated because of Israel, because of Zionism. And what we're gonna see that more increasingly all over the region, Bahrain, Iraq, Lebanon, Yemen, all over the region, we're going to see more resistance. So.
There you have it, Mr. Ramiro Funes, activist and political commentator from Los Angeles. Mr. Funes, thank you and stay safe. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has strongly condemned the Israeli killing of two Palestinian abductees, including the prominent surgeon Adnan Ahmed al-Barash. The Palestinian surgeon was abducted by Israeli forces while on duty at Gaza's Al-Awda hospital last December. The movement said the two Palestinian abductees died as a result of severe torture and medical neglect at Israel's detention facilities. It said the killing of Palestinian abductees by Israeli forces is a war crime and part of the heinous acts perpetrated against Palestinian people by the regime. Hamas also asked the international community to take urgent action to denounce and criminalize the Israeli regime's atrocities. According to Palestinian officials, the new fatalities bring the total number of Palestinian abductees killed in Israeli prisons and detention camps due to torture and medical neglect to 18 since October 7, 2023. The Israeli regime has launched another airstrike on Syria, targeting positions in the vicinity of the capital, Damascus. According to Syrian military, the new Israeli aggression came from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights. The military source added that the airstrike injured 8 soldiers and caused some material damage. Israel has been conducting airstrikes on Syria over the past several years. The regime's latest strikes come amid Israel's ongoing genocidal war against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, which has killed nearly 34,600 civilians, mostly women and children. Activists in Seoul marked the Global Day of Action to end arms transfers to Israel, with peace advocates and lawmakers performing a die-in across from the office of President Yoon Suk-yeol. They say South Korea's tens of millions of dollars in arms trade with Israel must end, and that Hyundai must stop selling Israel equipment to demolish Palestinian houses for Israeli settlement. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
With their die-in mimicking the Israeli bombing of Gaza, South Korean peace campaigners' Global Day of Action demanded the country stop sending arms that fuel Israel's genocide. South Korea has seen its weapons trade with Israel grow significantly over the past decade.
South Korea has sold weapons worth $47 million to Israel over the past 10 years. Exports increased year by year.
And South Korea's arms exports to Israel carried on despite Israel's massacres of civilians.
Even when the Israeli military strikes refugee camps and destroys hospitals, and even when the International Court of Justice determines that the Israeli military is committing genocide in Gaza, arms exports continue.
Last February, South Korea amended a law doubling the financing available for arms exports.
With Israel's genocide in Gaza, arms trade to Israel is banned under international convention. South Korea is a party and the U.S. a signatory to the Global Global Arms Treaty, which says that states should not transfer arms if it knows those weapons will be used to commit genocide, war crimes, or attacks on civilians.
Despite various international agreements related to the arms trade, enforcement is lacking.
On April 5th, the UN Human Rights Council passed a resolution to stop arms exports to Israel. But because it's non-binding, no decision to suspend exports has actually been made official. And now our voices are being heard more in such mass movements and UN resolutions.
Activists have been documenting Israel's genocide and war crimes, as estimations now suggest thousands of people, mostly women and children, have been killed by Israel and the weapons it imports from the U.S., Germany, Italy, South Korea, and elsewhere. Frank Smith, Seoul.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care, and bye-bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Punishment of aggressor, religious and international rights. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Most of the battles of the Prophet of Islam were defensive and he rarely initiated a war. Indeed, Islam is not an advocate of violence and inhumane behaviors. No matter how the West is trying to depict a violent and anti-human image of this religion. After the Islamic Republic of Iran's attack on the military bases of the Zionist regime in mid-April, this sentence was heard a lot. Iran enforced the best way of punishing the aggressor. Since attacking a country's embassy is tantamount to invading and attacking its soil, it has been permitted in international rules to the country to respond to the invader. Legitimate defense is the right of all countries, based on which they can take immediate military reaction against an armed attack. Thus, Iran's move was taken according to paragraph 51 of the UN Charter and was a response to the aggression and invasion of the Zionist regime to Iran's diplomatic place. Stay tuned for the second part of the three-part program on the recent attack of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Israel's military bases. Punishment of aggressor matters not only in a political field, but also it is necessary according to the Islamic teachings. God says in verse 39 of chapter Hajj of the Noble Quran, "Those who are fought against are permitted to fight because they have been wronged. and Allah is indeed able to help them. Imam Ali, peace upon him, notes this issue where he says, "The day of the oppressed against the oppressor is more severe than the day of the oppressor against the oppressed." It means that the day in which an oppressed person takes revenge from an oppressor is much harsher than the day when the oppressor used to wrong the oppressed. The Imam means that the oppressed should not sit idle against oppressors. They should rather try to react to oppressors decisively to deter them and make them regret. We read in the history of Islam that Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in every battle used to first advise the enemies and guide them to the right path. But once they persisted in their adamancy, the Prophet would start fighting them. Interestingly, besides the faithless, most of the Jews who had racist inclinations like the modern Zionists used to disturb the Prophet of Islam. They were so rude that they said to the Prophet that God's hand is tied up. But Allah answered them in verse 64 of chapter Ma'edah. The Jews say, "Allah's hand is tied up. Tied up be their hands, and cursed be they for what they say. Rather, his hands are wide open. He bestows as he wishes. Surely many of them will be increased by what has been sent to you from your Lord in rebellion and unfaith. And we have cast enmity and hatred amongst them until the day of resurrection. Every time they ignite the flames of war, Allah puts them out. They seek to cause corruption on the earth, and Allah does not like the agents of corruption." This verse calls such Jews, modern Zionists, as the agents of corruption on the earth. Another verse of chapter Ma'edah refers to corruption and the killing of the innocent by the Jews, saying, "That's why we decreed for the children of Israel that whoever kills a soul without its being of guilty of manslaughter or corruption on the earth is as though he had killed all mankind, and whoever saves a life is as though he had saved all mankind. Our apostles certainly brought them manifest signs, yet even after that many of them commit excess on the earth." The Noble Quran has spoken in many verses about the obstinacy and endless disturbances of Jews towards Prophet Moses and their indecent deeds and murdering of innocent people in the time of the Prophet of Islam. Muslims have always been harmed and wronged by Jews who are today's Zionists, regardless of their religion, as some of the US and European officials have openly announced to be Zionists. The world has witnessed innumerable oppressions of Zionists to the defenseless Palestinian people for over 75 years. The Islamic Republic of Iran, too, has experienced the enmity of the fabricated Zionist regime since the victory of the Islamic Revolution and the birth of the Islamic Republic system in 1979. This sinister regime even played an active role in suppression of the people during the struggles of the Islamic Revolution, as the security agents of the Shah's regime were trained by Israeli notorious criminal spying apparatus, the Mossad. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution too, the Israeli agents trained the MKO terrorists and even armed them to murder the laymen here and there. Israel's criminal record is not limited to this, as the fake regime, during the 8-year imposed war of Saddam against Iran, stood beside the Iraqi dictator against the Islamic Republic of Iran. We'll be right back. The criminal actions of the Zionist regime against the Islamic Iran have continued through decades via assassination of religious, scientific, and military elite for the past decades. These actions have been done in full coordination with the pressures that the U.S. and its European allies have enforced against the Islamic Republic to halt its progresses in various fields. But the Islamic Republic, based on the teachings of the Noble Quran and the practice of the Prophet of Islam and his infallible progeny, has pioneered to defend the oppressed and fight the oppressor. Iran enjoys peaceful and friendly engagement with neighbors and non-aggressive countries. Yet, when it faces open enmity of the front of arrogance and global Zionism, symbolized by the U.S. and Israel, it will not hesitate to give the fitting penal response. The Islamic Republic of Iran will never withdraw from its just and logical stances. The missile and drone attack to the Zionist regime in mid-April in response to the regime's crime of murdering Iran's military advisors in its consulate in Damascus was unprecedented in the global arena and a turning point not just in the history of the Islamic Revolution, but the resistance front and the world at large. Iran had sent General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and some other military advisors upon the official request of the Syrian government. After the Israeli illegal and criminal measure, the IRGC attack on a few Israeli military targets was done according to Iran's legitimate right to defend its territory and interests. The IRGC powerful missiles and drones smashed the military bases of the Zionist regime and caused unprecedented horror and trauma in the Zionist camp and its cohorts and backers in the front of arrogance. As the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said several years ago, "The era of hit and run has passed." Thus, whenever the Zionist regime dares to cause the least harm on Iran's interest and territory, it will face a crushing, colossal response.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the true role model. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, you are listening to A to Z, and we want to talk about the true role model. Well, if you look at Quran, it guides us in all aspects of our life. So one of the aspects of life is the reality of the ideals. We cannot live our life not as a person but as a human phenomenon. We cannot live our life without a role model, without ideals. Whether you are a religious person, whether you are non-religious person, whoever you are, you have a role model in your life, and that role model, that ideal affects your behavior, affects your thoughts. So let's ask Quran what it says about the role models and the role they play in our life. Quran says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم واصبر نفسك مع الذين يدعون ربهم بالغداة والعشي يريدون وجهه ولا تعد عيناك عنهم تريد زينة الحياة الدنيا ولا تطع من أغفلنا قلبه عن ذكرنا واتبع هواه وكان أمره فرطا. And keep yourself patient in the company of those who pray to their Lord morning and evening, seeking His countenance. And you do not turn your eyes away from them, seeking the adornment of the early life. And do not obey one whose heart we have made heedless of our remembrance, so that he has followed his own lust, and whose behavior has exceeded the limits. So here Quran is talking about a role model.
a role model which can play a very influential role in our lives. Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z. We are talking about the true role model. Well, I recited a verse from Quran which says that you should always look towards the people of virtue. You should always look towards the people who are connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. وَاصْبِرْ نَفْسَكَ مَعَ الَّذِينَ يَدْعُونَ رَبَّهُمْ. Keep yourself patient by looking and being with those who always are connected to God through their prayers. So who are those? Those are the chosen ones. Those are the saints. Those are awliyaullah who always are connected to God through prayers. So Quran is telling us, if you want to have a role model, if you want to have an ideal in your life, the best ideal for you are those who are connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the supreme being, the one who is the source of all the beauty, who is the source of all the goodness. So those people, those selected and chosen people, who are the people of virtue, who are the people of wisdom, Quran is telling us that you should always look towards them. You should always make them your role model and ideals. Only in this way you can be patient in your life. It's not easy to be patient. It's not easy to face your own inner desires. It's not easy to face the challenges of life. So where to find the help? Well, the help lies when you look upon the people of virtue, when you look upon those heroes of virtue, when you look upon those heroes of wisdom who had lived their life with wisdom and virtue in every moment of their life. So Quran is telling us that just direct yourself by looking upon towards some personalities who are the personalities of virtue to take the help from their guidance. May Allah help us to look upon the people of virtue, Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, and help us to be the people of virtue. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The vast majority of Gaza are currently living in tents, located in makeshift camps, due to the Zionist regime's systematic targeting of UN shelters, schools, hospitals, and even mosques and churches. Living in a tent, however, is not equivalent to safety, as many airstrikes and artillery shelling have targeted the encampments across various regions of the besieged Gaza Strip. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "The Palestine Chronicle spoke with two Palestinians currently displaced in the city of Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip. Amid the unparalleled scale of death and destruction, at least 1.9 million people were displaced by the Zionist regime's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, according to UN figures. The total population of Gaza, at least prior to the war, was 2.3 million people. The vast majority of these people are currently living in tents, located in makeshift camps, due to Israel's systematic targeting of UN shelters, schools, hospitals, and even mosques and churches. Living in a tent, however, is not equivalent to safety, as many airstrikes and artillery shelling have targeted the encampments across various regions of the besieged Gaza Strip. Moreover, the living conditions in the tents are extremely poor, especially following an unusual heat wave in the Gaza Strip, which reportedly already killed two children." Philip Lazzarini, UNRWA Commissioner General, explained recently that Palestinians living in the tents have to endure death, hunger, disease, displacement, and now living in greenhouses-like structures under scorching heat. The Palestine Chronicle spoke with two Palestinians currently displaced in the city of Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip. Hajjo Shaima al-Isabi is living in a tent with her family after escaping from the Hamad towers in the southern city of Khan Yunis, which was targeted by the occupation forces. Al-Isabi told the Palestine Chronicle, "The tent is extremely hot, and the overall situation is very difficult. There are insects everywhere, and the heat is intense, and it's impossible to adapt to this life," she added. "Children suffer from everything. Although we constantly clean the tent, there are insects everywhere." Al-Isabi and her family remained homeless when the Zionist regime completely destroyed the city of Hamad. She said, "We managed to buy an apartment in Hamad with great difficulty. We were very happy, but the occupation did not give us time to enjoy living in it. When the war broke out, we were forced to flee from our house, and we found out that it was completely destroyed." Al-Isabi fled to the Nusayrat refugee camp and then settled in Deir al-Balah, she said. "We spent the winter struggling with severe cold in the tents, and now we are suffering from the heat." Al-Isabi's husband, who suffers from heart disease, expressed his desire to go back to Hamad, so they decided to go back, and they lived in their destroyed house for a week, she explained. "Then the occupation forces invaded the city again, and it was a very difficult week under intense bombardment. When they tried to leave, however, they were forced to cross Israeli checkpoints. On their third attempt, Israeli occupation forces arrested Al-Isabi's husband, while the rest of the family managed to return to the tents in Deir al-Balah," she said. My husband has a heart condition and cannot endure torture or imprisonment. I hope he will be released soon, she said in a shaky voice. Our life means nothing without him. We rely on him for everything. We hope the war will end and we can live in safety. Even amid extreme conditions, however, Palestinians continue to show incredible resilience. Many refugees decided to organize activities and set up schools in the encampments to allow children to study despite the war. Haj Akram al-Ajuri fled from Jabalia refugee camp in the north to Nusayrat in central Gaza and remained there for a month. When the Zionist regime forces invaded Nusayrat, al-Ajuri and his family headed to Rafah, where they stayed for a month and a half. Later, they returned to Nusayrat for 20 days before settling in tents in the city of Deir al-Balah. Al-Ajuri told the Palestine Chronicle, "In all the encampments, I have organized beautiful activities for the displaced people, including events to praise the Prophet Muhammad." He explained, "One of the refugees, who was a teacher, dedicated a tent to educate children." Al-Ajuri added, "The occupation deprived our children of education since the beginning of the war. Therefore, these activities are very important. We will look for other activities to support our children. We hope the war will end soon and the suffering we endure will end and we can return to our homes safely, God willing."
Welcome to the Israel Watch. The resignation of the head of Amman and the possibility of further resignations are rolling out, along with escalating protests from the families of prisoners, in addition to ongoing threats of attacking Rafah and the situation on the front with Hezbollah. Protests in American universities are also being carried out against the occupation. I'd like to go ahead and welcome my guest today, Mr. Ali Murad, a writer and political researcher. Welcome, Mr. Murad.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We begin today with a solidarity protest with Gaza and the Palestinian cause, which were witnessed in American universities and have angered Netanyahu, who saw in them nothing but anti-Semitism reminiscent of Nazi days.
Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. And what is important now is for all of us who are interested and are, cherish our values and our civilization, to stand up together and to say enough is enough. We have to stop anti-Semitism because anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine. It always precedes larger conflagrations that engulf the entire world.
Well, Mr. Ali, I do want to point out first, I mean, Netanyahu is speaking English, so it's obvious who he's directing his speech to. Do these protests, do you believe, pose any serious dilemma for the Zionist entity?
If it wasn't serious to the Zionist entity and the Zionist lobby in the United States, Benjamin Netanyahu wouldn't have spoken out loudly trying to accuse all the solidarity protests in American universities with Palestine and trying to accuse them of anti-Semitism. You can notice the narrative. At the beginning, they tried to show that anyone who have sympathy with the Palestinians as anti-Semites Now they are accusing anyone who demands to a ceasefire that he is anti-Semite. So here is the contradiction in their narrative. I think they didn't know that at the beginning of the war that they would reach this point to try to do anything they can through the politicians, the rotten politicians in Washington who are getting bribes from the Zionist lobby, and as well as the the academics and
yes.
Media and think tanks and all the elite in Washington. They are trying to silence those students, but it's not working.
Well, Mr. Ali, do you see it in any way similar to the anti-Vietnam, what happened with the war then, the protest?
Actually, if you go back to the 1968, 1970 protests, student protests in those same universities now, I think there's a difference. By then, they were protesting against something American, the American involvement in the Vietnam War. Right now, it's not something American directly. They are protesting the support of the U.S. administration to the Zionists and their genocidal war in Gaza, but
yes.
They know there's a difference if you make a comparison. They are, I think it's a rebellion against the establishment, the imperial establishment that is insisting on aiding and feeding this Zionist entity, which committed every heinous crime you can imagine.
Netanyahu's remarks on anti-Semitism in the protests at American universities against his massacres and war crimes in Gaza were accompanied by a Hebrew media campaign against Biden, who did not take a firm stance to suppress these protests. Well, as we know, Mr. Ali, hundreds have been arrested at these protests. How do you interpret this campaign against Biden in the Hebrew media?
I think the Zionists who have been committing genocide in Gaza for more than 6 months, they are expecting Biden to give them all the tools to continue. So they think that Biden should act in a similar way to the way they are acting in Gaza.
So the protests are not enough for them, obviously.
Yeah, so they want Biden to use force
yes.
to end those protests. Though Biden is giving the stance and the opposite stance at the same time. He is trying to accuse those students, and at the same time he's saying that he is with the freedom of speech, this whole hypocritical narrative. I think that the Zionists in Tel Aviv, they want to show the world that those who are protesting in the universities, they are Hamas operatives. This is their words. And I think it's not a problem for a large portion of those students. They are saying that we support resistance. We support Hezbollah. We support Hamas. Because
exactly. We saw Hezbollah flags actually during the protests.
Exactly. Because they are defending the people. They are the only ones on this earth who are defending the innocent people in Gaza. Because it's not enough to protest, it's not enough for the unviolent struggle. It's you have to use force here to put an end to this aggression and this genocide.
Well, talking about putting an end, do you believe Biden's going to go ahead and clamp down on these protests, or do you think he's going to go ahead and let them continue?
I think of what we see in the U.S. Congress and of what the spokesmen and women from the Biden administration have said so far, I think they are supporting the suppression taking place in some universities, and they think that they can do the same thing that the Johnson administration and the Nixon administration did in 1968 and 1970. So they think they can do it, and it won't hurt the Biden campaign,
yes.
Before months of the presidential elections.
Well, with that now, let's go ahead and move over now. There is no absolute victory in the war on Gaza in light of the failure to achieve the stated objectives, and there must be a redefinition of these objectives. This is a conclusion reached by Amos Yadlin, the former chief of military intelligence. We know that Israel is passing through a holiday. And now with this, can we see that the Zionist entity is going through a crisis, specifically a leadership crisis at the moment?
Actually, we have a state of denial from the Netanyahu government. I'm talking about his allies from the alt-right. What Yedlin is saying, he is talking on behalf of the secular sects in the Zionist entity who were protesting against Netanyahu before Tufan al-Aqsa. And I think that they want to force, to push Netanyahu into the corner where he resigns, because the way they are talking about the objectives of the war and the definition of those objectives that Yedlin spoke about, I think the Netanyahu bloc, they think that everything is clear. The audience of the right, they think, they really believe that they are going to achieve the objectives of the war as they enter Rafah. While all the military guys like Yedlin and other generals, they are saying the opposite, because they know that the resistance is not going to be defeated. The goal of eradicating Hamas is not going to be accomplished.
Yes, as we know, Amos Yedlin is a very experienced guy in his position.
Exactly.
With that, Mr. Ali, we're going to go ahead and go over to a domino effect. With the resignation of Amman's head, Aharon Haliva, following the defeat in the Battle of Al-Aqsa Storm, which has caused shockwaves in the political and military occupation society, sparking strong repercussions with the possibility of further resignations and demands for Netanyahu's resignation. Hebrew social media platforms have been flooded with comments on the resignation of the head of the military intelligence, calling for Netanyahu's resignation along with members of the government. Here are some of the comments.
Done. Now we must see the officials responsible for the disaster resigning daily, starting with the Prime Minister. Jonathan, Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir are next in line for resignation. Matan, Herzi Halifi, Chief of Staff, it's your turn now. Resign. Polly, everyone who was in charge of the army and the government on that day must leave. All of them, without exception.
Well, Mr. Ali, I mean, as we mentioned, a domino effect. The resignation of the head of Amman may lead to further resignations, not just militarily, but security and even political officials. What do you expect here?
Well, the logic says that there has to be a domino effect here, because we are talking about a division within the Israeli terrorist offensive forces. We know that Halevi, the head of the army, he said that he takes some of the responsibility as the war erupted. Also, you got ministers, ex-ministers, generals, heads of other divisions. They all said that they take some of the responsibility. But the only man who is supposed to take the whole responsibility, because he is the one leading, which is Benjamin Netanyahu, I don't think he is willing to say he is responsible and take the responsibility and thus declare his resignation, because Netanyahu's only project within the political life and the Zionist entity is to remain in power. He is doing everything to remain in power.
Yes.
So he is not going to do this. I expect that more generals would resign, but Netanyahu will not.
Well, Mr. Ali, I mean, the situation definitely escalated once Ben-Gavir arrived. To what extent could such incidents escalate against Zionist ministers and officials accused of obstructing this captive exchange deal with the resistance? And do you see any deal anytime soon?
You know, most of the families and the protesters who are demanding a deal for hostage exchange, they know that Ben-Gvir has been blocking any chances, as well as Smotrich, any chances to reach a deal, because they said it openly that they are going to resign anytime a deal is reached.
Yes.
Because they were offering that do not give anything to Hamas, count on the starvation we are making to the Gazans, and they would give us all the hostages for free. This is not going to happen. So here the families of the hostages, of the Zionist hostages, they know that Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, as well as the Likud, they are obstructing any chance to get their sons and daughters alive, because as we all know, as Al-Qassam Brigades declared months ago, that nearly half of the remaining hostages were killed by Israeli bombs. So Netanyahu has been acting as if he is trying to let go of this burden on his shoulders, which is the hostages. He doesn't want to give the resistance anything in return.
A local police force option. Is this practical and feasible, in your opinion?
Actually, they tried it within the war.
Yes.
Weeks ago and months ago, they have been trying to do this. They tried it with the tribes. It failed. And, you know, as we all know, most of the tribes, they went out and they said, we are not going to be collaborators with the occupation forces. They tried through even, you know, the Palestinian Authority intelligence services. They sent their own operatives to the Gaza Strip in coordination with the intelligence, the Zionist intelligence units, and it failed. Actually, whoever gets those ideas into discussion, it's quite clear that he knows nothing about how the resistance works and how the resistance is capable of taking out those collaborators that the Zionists want to handle their job inside the Gaza Strip.
Well, with that, I'd like to go ahead and thank my guest, Mr. Ali Murad, a writer and political researcher, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Until next time, salam.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The anti-Gaza war protest movement has revived the Palestinian national cause, and a new generation of American Jews are challenging the claim that Zionism owns their narrative. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East, I wrote, once again, Colombia has been at the center of the revolt, with an encampment protesting Israel's assault, sparking a wave of similar actions on college campuses.